that we're tribal. Like humans are tribal, and that's why there are wars, and that's why we fight and all this kind of stuff. And that's, I think that's sort of biologically in us, protection and survival. And that's the thing we have to navigate, because we hurt each other out of that in-group, out-group stuff.
Welcome to Deconstructing Therapy, transforming therapy and the therapists who lead it. Let's deep dive into conversations, reshaping therapy into a powerful tool for healing, liberation, and systemic change. Join us as we challenge the status quo, reimagine care, and celebrate therapists breaking barriers. Let's transform therapy together. Today, I'm so happy to be joined by Jean Lee, a licensed clinical psychologist based in Evanston, Illinois. Jean is a certified EMDR therapist and an emotionally focused couples therapist, specializing in anxiety, depression, trauma, and relationship challenges. She's also an active member of the Chicago EFT board, where she helps build a strong community for therapists, expand training, and make emotionally focused therapy more accessible to diverse populations. Beyond her clinical work, Jean leads an Asian-identified therapist peer group and co-founded CATCH, a support network for Asian American therapists. She's deeply committed to social justice and increasing accessibility in mental health care.
Hi, Jean.
Hi, Alicia.
Happy to have you here.
Very glad to be here. A little nervous, but I'm happy to be here.
Well, I'm glad you're here. You know, you have been a really big part of my journey this last year. I've been on my own little decolonization mode, and it has been a tricky one. You know, I'm from New York and kind of coming from that atmosphere and challenging some of the internal racism and assimilation that I grew up with, and coming here. And then the therapy world is fairly white. And then also being in the South, it's like just very black and white. There isn't much more diversity beyond that. So it was a big struggle for me to really find belonging. When I came upon your affinity group, you did a beautiful Asian affinity group. It's just a life-giving to me. There's so many parts of being Asian and being in this world that are so nuanced and that was not fully understood. I would often go to black brown groups and you be understood on how it's different there, and maybe how you have code shift and navigating the dominant culture, but all the little nuances of just being Asian and the complexity of that, I never felt fully understood there till I came to your group. So I'm just so grateful to have you, and I really wanted to have this conversation to help understand how you started that group, what drove you to that, what helped you create such that cultivating that space.
Well, yeah, and we've loved having you. I mean, you just bring such a unique voice and an important one. And I don't know, you kind of highlight the challenges for better and for worse. Our culture is so nuanced. And I think your experience is so out loud in some ways, which kind of helps us articulate our experience, which is partly why we exist. To kind of articulate our experience, I think for me, I just live my experience, and you kind of sense something is different, or you just assume it's different, but because it's all of our lives.
That's so true when you're just living in it. And I think that's what the affinity groups do, because we're so just swimming in it. We don't realize there's a reason behind it. There's words to it, and when we can name it. So I like that you're saying that's a good way of putting it. That's why we exist, partly to put name, to narrate our experience, put it out there. And you're often not aware of that because you're like, I'm just living it. I'm just in it. And I know you said you grew up in a very diverse environment in California. So how did you go from that to not having that much awareness and just living it to being like, no, I want to start naming this. I want to create these groups.
Well, so just a real brief history. I mean, I was born and raised in Chicago, which is where I am right now. But all my higher education, college and grad school, was on the West Coast in California. And that has been really awesome, because when I went to UC Berkeley and as an undergrad, and went from, I don't know, my high school, which might have been 5-ish% Asian, to a school that was over 30% Asian, it was culture shock for me. And not only that, being among I think, mainly Chinese Americans, and I'm Korean American. So it's like, this is Asian, but not the Asian I grew up with. And so that was also an eye opener, and being like, wow, like, you're similar, but not. And then it helped me articulate who I am in comparison. And then going to grad school in LA, having a pretty diverse class, I would say, of psychologists in training, it was a good articulation. And then coming, and then I was, spent some time on the East Coast and then came back to Chicago. So it's been a journey, and an ongoing one, and one that I love. Maybe I should say, we are also not all the same.
All Asians are not the same.
Are not the same.
Everybody that looks like you is not Chinese, and everybody that looks like me is not Indian.
Exactly. Exactly. And even Koreans in Chicago are different than Koreans in LA. So,
you know. Can you tell me about that moment where you're like, when I went there and then I was in this Asian world, mostly Chinese, but it helped me understand me better.
Yeah, you know, it just helped me reflect, because again, my experience is just my experience. And especially until your teens, you grow up in it, and that's your world, and you think that's normative, right? And then you pluck yourself out of that context, a Midwestern, mainly white context, and then going to a place that's totally different, or they do things differently, and then seeing that their norms are their assumptions, and I felt different as an outsider, maybe even as a Chicagoan. It was both intriguing and fascinating and interesting, and also a little bit uncomfortable at times, mostly not in a bad way, just in a, the world is bigger than what I thought, and in a very experiential way, not just books.
And it is so fascinating how going to different cultures and different locales and stuff help you actually understand you better.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Kind of a compare and contrast. As long as base is accepting of that, great. I love culture. I love travel. I love, you know, seeing how other people do things. But as you and I both know, it can be harmful, the differences too, if people don't understand them, or, you know, the microaggressions, the macroaggressions.
And that's, yeah, it's not about having the different cultures. It's about the lack of understanding.
I think so. Yeah.
What would you say is one of the highlights that you learned about yourself, or learned about your culture, or you within your culture?
So when I went to California, you know, you just end up in certain circles. And I ended up hanging out with the other Asians I hung out with, mainly Chinese. And then I just realized, oh, the Chinese food I grew up eating was like more like American Chinese food. And, you know, and there are these foods that are totally normal Chinese food that I just didn't know. And so I think, you know, maybe it was like a humbling stance, first of all, but then also meeting other Koreans who grew up. I mean, you can go to LA and it looks like Seoul. And I was like, whoa, I'm not used to this either. I'm not used to so much representation, if that makes sense. And then I've heard your other podcasts and things like that, and sort of like confronting your own internalized racism. Oh, I don't like this either. I don't like being around so many Asian people. We're so conspicuous now, where I'm used to just hiding in the back.
Because when you're first generation, you're just like in this in between.
Even as being born here, for my age group, that's a minority. Most people immigrated when they were young kids. So I didn't know I don't consider myself fluent in Korean, even though I understand a lot of it. So my parents also, they decided before we were even born, my siblings and I, that they weren't going to be that cliche tiger mom, tiger dad kind of thing. And they really weren't. However, I did have enough Koreans in my circle and in my school, and they did go to a very academically driven high school, that they didn't have to push me. I wanted good grades, but I didn't feel that intense pressure.
That's interesting. They made that very intentional choice.
Yeah. So again, not all Asians are the same. I think they saw that stereotype and decided we don't want to be that, even while they had standards.
Did they encourage more assimilation into the dominant culture for you?
No. Like most Asians, I don't know if non-Asians know this, but a lot of immigrants will call white people Americans. Oh, it'll be like, don't be like Americans, which meant don't be like white people, right?
Right. I was curious if you grew up with that too. Yes.
And I think even to this day, they might still use those terms. So they didn't really see themselves in that context. They didn't see themselves as American, nor do they really care to be. They do want to be accepted in the society. And even my parents will say, oh, don't stay in LA. There's too many Korean people there.
That's so interesting. I think that's a little very common. It sounds very similar to the way I grew up, but there is a protectiveness of they want you to hold on to your culture.
Absolutely.
You want to be accepted, in that world. But no, don't become too American now.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. So I think I grew up with that duality, like feeling very Korean, probably at this point more Korean American, because as the newer Koreans come from South Korea, I'm like, oh, your mentality is different too. Yeah, I work with a lot of international students now from the Northwestern campus. And that's also really interesting because I'm like, oh, the newer immigrants are different than the immigrants who came in the 70s and 80s.
What's the differences you're noticing?
I think for both Korean and Chinese immigrants, the countries have developed to the point where they are on the main stage. Whereas when my parents came, Korea was emerging from a war and, you know, they were not considered, I think, a first world economy. So the Koreans coming now, and I think the Chinese, to a certain extent, have a lot of cultural pride. So I think there was more shame among the earlier generations.
And I think just the generation we grew up in, even here, dominant culture, there was more shame too. There was more pressure to assimilate.
Mm-hmm.
Like I'm seeing the younger generation, there's a lot more acceptance of different cultures. And
exactly. Like, for instance, our parents, I'm sure they wanted us to speak Korean growing up. And I remember speaking Korean as a little kid because that's what my parents spoke. But I think in my generation, there are a lot of Koreans who spoke English in the house because they wanted their kids
to learn English. And how, and that's, you kind of grew up with a mix of that.
Yeah. I mean, my dad speaks good English for someone in his generation, and he enjoys languages to this day. Speaks, you know, almost 100% English to me. Whereas my mom, it's more of a mix, but her English is also pretty good. I have an older sister and a younger brother, and we're all kind of.
So it sounds like a good kind of a mix, which is very common, again, with this first generation, right? It's just there's a part of the culture they're holding on to, part that they're, you're wanting to assimilate into. And
navigating the in-betweenness of that. You do, I think, unconsciously, to a large degree, switch between cultures, switch between identities.
You don't even realize you're doing it.
We don't even realize it. So going back to one of your original questions, in terms of the affinity group, Asian affinity group, or emotionally focused therapist, my friend Irene, she also was doing the trainings, and she beelined for me at the training because she's like, oh my gosh, another Asian face. And we would just talk about how we love EFT, but we also kind of just sensed, but how do we make this more relevant to our communities? Because there was something about it that felt, I don't know, a little uncomfortable or off or not quite on the target, even as we believe in the kind of the fundamentals, but the how looks very different in our cultures. I mean, so in emotionally focused therapy for couples, I mean, we just prioritize and privilege emotion in the therapy, which I am 100% on board, but the hows of that, of how you approach your clients in interacting with their own emotions. First of all, emotions are kind of, I think, looked down, I don't know if that's too strong or maybe not. Seen as maybe immature, you know, don't show your cards, or
there's too much of a risk for that vulnerability of showing your emotions. Do you see a nuance or difference there between Korean and other Asians?
You know, it's so funny. There are similarities and there are differences. I think most Asian countries are coming from a war and trauma. So most of our parents have inherited that, and then it's distilled down to us as well. So I think emotions are either out of control and not integrated, or seen, like I said, seen as immature, childish, and then they over-index on intellectualism, right?
Yeah, I like that you're connecting it to the history. I think that's so important for us to understand the history and the historical context of like why we develop the way we do, because then that kind of saves us from, oh, these cultures just don't do this. They're inherently this way or that way. They can't do emotions, right? These were war-ridden countries, and that's why people developed in a very protective way to shape their emotions. It is protective.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't want to overgeneralize. And, you know, I also know I don't know everything. But if you think about, let's think about the Vietnamese, so many came over as refugees, or Koreans, we had a Korean War in the 50s, or Pakistanis, Indian, and that culture. They are growing. I guess I would say my parents grew up with parents who lived through that, and everyone was just in survival mode. Yeah. And then you come and immigrate to the US, and then they're in survival mode again, right? Just trying to make a living, figure it out.
Yeah. And you can't be seen as somebody who's going to stand out. And so it is self-serving to, we got to just keep our head down and keep going and be strong. And that's how you make it. You just keep working harder, and you do have to compartmentalize to do that. Yeah.
don't complain, just keep going. You're lucky if you have a community of other immigrants around you. Not everybody has that privilege. Assimilate, make it in this country. And I feel like the younger generations now are in a very different context where diversity is celebrated.
That survival mode, I think, is being lessened generation by generation as well.
And in addition to our cultures, we're not that verbal, I don't think, as culture. So we don't talk about our experiences. Sometimes I would ask, you're in grad school doing genograms, and I would have to ask my parents, and I remember doing our genogram and my dad was just telling me literally just who was who and when they were born. And my mom cut in and said, do you have to know all these details? I haven't even gotten into who's in a fight with whom. And
because there's so much other forms of expression that are not verbal. Just acts of service, I think, are huge in Asian culture, right? And then just food alone, like just that, I could say there's a whole nuance of communication that happens through food, through customs of how you're offering somebody food, how you're like, there's just this whole other world of communication that's so nonverbal. Yeah, we don't have that language in the same way, but we're communicating, I feel like, in different ways.
Yeah, exactly. When my mom first visited me out in California when I was there in college, she brought a whole suitcase of ramen. And I said, oh, we can get this here. And she's like, but I wanted to bring it. So,
And there's all these customs and traditions of how much expression you're giving with your food and how you're accepting food or not, or you're supposed to know all the rules of it, but it's all unspoken. So we have so much communication in the dominant culture here. There's a lot more that is expressive with words and even just being able to express their process. Like when thoughts are unprocessed, they have more language in English for words of that. Oh, I haven't thought about this yet. I'm thinking about this out loud. That unprocessed language is very unique to Western culture as well. Whereas in Asian culture, there's not even language for a lot of those unprocessed words. Like we process internally and then.
Yeah, there's a million sayings in Korean. And I think because they're expressing a feeling or a concept.
Yeah.
But it's indirect, not direct.
Yes. And there's a lot of indirect. Yeah, you're right. And I think there's a lot of already sayings that you already know. We have the same in ours. So that's why I want to challenge a little bit of we have emotion. It's just not as verbal. There's all these, and it's not as direct.
So as an Asian therapist, I'll speak for myself personally. I don't know about other people, but in some ways, I'm always feeling like I'm swimming upstream. Like it's not comfortable in a sense to directly talk and ask about what's your experience, what are you feeling? And I am of two minds of it. Like on the one hand, I think it's important to put into words and articulate it. Just like we kind of opened up this session talking about our experience. And at the same time, I do have questions of, is this the best way? Is this the right way? Like, we don't do this in our cultures. Are you being Western here?
Yes. And I still struggle with this. And I don't have, I don't have as many Asian clients, especially immigrants as much as you probably have to face with this. So, but it is a struggle because we want to help people put voice to their experience. That's so important, like you said originally. Mm-hmm. And it can cause a lot of miscommunication in our cultures. And the resentment and the misunderstandings and stuff that happens. And it's something that we should strive to correct if we can, but we don't want to shift so much we're wanting to westernize our culture either. So how do we integrate that? Do you think about that? Do you do that in sessions some where you're helping them express it in a way that is more aligned with the culture, but still helping them be more expressive? Because we don't want to colonize our people.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, how do you say Western culture offers this, the good parts of it? Because it's also not all bad, right? And what does it have to teach us? But also, how do we do that in our context and in their context?
Yes, exactly.
And yet we're all living in this context. Yeah. Which is why our affinity group exists, so that we could hash this out for ourselves and try to get clarity and get clear on that stuff.
Good. How do you do that in our context? Do you have any examples or any way like how you approach an Asian couple versus if you have a white couple? Do you showing up in the room any differently?
That is such a good question. You know, initially in this field, you could say this is internalized racism. I'm not convinced it is, but I didn't want to work with that many Asian people. It felt weird.
Yeah, I felt the same way.
Right? Like, yeah. I feel like I'm crossing boundaries. I feel intrusive. Also, my unconscious stuff started taking over. Like,
I felt like I would code shift into like that Asian self when I had an Asian couple. And I'm like, that's not my therapist self. So it was weird. I couldn't.
Yeah. I almost preferred a non-Asian.
Yes.
Yeah. Because then I was like, okay, well, I can just be me then. Luckily, since then, I have gotten a lot more comfortable working with our communities and our people. And how did that happen? I don't know. And I mean, to this day, I'm still asking those questions. Like, how do you work with these populations? I don't know. Again, I feel like I'm still working it out, even though I would say I'm a lot more comfortable seeing Asian clients now. And I don't have that weirdness of, oh, you feel like my brother. You feel like my
That's wonderful. But if you can picture yourself, like when you're walking into the room and there's an Asian couple, or if you're going to walk in and there's a white couple there, do you feel the same physically? Like if you can really take yourself to that moment?
I probably don't feel the same. It's not bad or good. It's just different.
There is a different version of it.
Yeah. It's almost like culturally, I feel more comfortable. Professionally, I might feel more uncomfortable. And we're bringing both selves into the room.
So you can feel a little bit of a different version of you coming up when you know that there's an Asian.
Oh, I think so. Yeah. Again, I haven't really articulated this. I felt this, but didn't articulate it. Yeah. I feel like slightly different. I think with, let's just say a white couple, I think I feel more fully just a professional self.
Yes.
In some ways that's easier because you have a job and you know what you're doing.
Right.
But with an Asian couple or individual, it's a little bit more like, yeah, some of those unspoken social rules do come into play, especially as an Asian population. Therapy is a very new concept. So maybe you're right. I'm probably making unconscious choices of what I can ask and cannot ask. And
it's like all the cultural norms kind of just get downloaded in your head and you're able to shift into that. But it's harder to tap into the professional norms. So
I think so. Or when you're building rapport with someone, that you probably start out with those cultural rules, unspoken, written, unwritten, like cultural rules. And yet I'm also thinking, but I have to break those rules too.
That's where I still struggle with it. I haven't had much experience with that, but I resonate a lot with what you're saying because the professional self, like when we go to classes, when we go to trainings, we're trained in that way, which is very like Western centric anyway. We can pull out that Western part of us because we have both sides and we can cultivate that. And the professional version of us is trained in that way. So it's easy to step into that. And then the one that we have at home and the one that we go to our parties with and our communities and our churches, right? That one can just pop out naturally too. And when we have an Asian client, we have to integrate them in this way that they are not used to being integrated.
Right. There aren't that many spaces for us to talk about. I wish I could send you some Asian couples and clients so we could have more of a discussion of what this is like. But you're right. And even in trainings, I mean, some people are so great about being like kind of demanding. And I don't mean that in a bad way. Like, hey, there's diversity culture. Are you talking about that? Is that in your training? I'll be honest, in my mind, I don't expect them to. I mean, I kind of do. I expect them at this point to at least give lip service.
I do now after I think I've been going to your groups and talking about it. But before that, I was like, I just go to these trainings. I take the information and then I code shift it in my own head.
Yes.
And I go, that's what I've operated in the world always, right? I don't expect anybody to understand the Asian part of me. I don't even expect it.
That's part of us maybe as Asians of this country. We come here thinking we're entering in a white American world and it's our job to figure out how that's going to work for us.
I think that's so true. That's so true because it's a new concept. And I'm proud to see so many Black Americans are always like being more vocal about it and saying, no, this needs to be shown or we need a model for this or this. And as an Asian, that feels a little bit more uncomfortable, right? It feels like, no, that's our job. You go into a space, you understand that it's not going to fully represent or serve you. you take what you can from it. You take what you're supposed to or not, and then you figure it out.
Yeah. And part of that, I think, is our culture is like humility and don't be too loud or call attention to yourself. I do want to point out a really important distinction, though. For most Black people, it wasn't their choice to come here. Versus for the Asian immigrant population, I mean, the refugees are a little bit different than the ones who came here for opportunity, opted into coming into this country. And I think that has affected the way we see how we assimilate.
Of course. And it serves us to keep our head down and be invisible and work really hard. And then we get our needs met that way. And we have these isolated little communities where we get these other needs met. And I don't want to fully speak for Black. I can't ever get close to that experience. But what I can imagine is, yeah, they were torn away. They don't even have that cultural setting here. And the only way you're going to get your needs met is to advocate loudly for them. Otherwise, if they're quiet, they get stampled on. Like, yeah, they don't get seen as like this humble person that's just working hard in the corner. Like,
exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. So I kind of want to honor that difference.
So, yeah, it is nuanced, and I'm like happy to hear that you're still figuring it out.
Did you want me to say
you have it all figured out and you can let me know? And that's why you ran this group and you've done all these things now.
Yeah, no, I'm still figuring it out. And also what's difficult is like the times are changing. So the way it intersects is changing as time goes on.
So what led you to run the group? And can you kind of just talk about the group? Because I remember you sending an email or something about how the group was one thing at first and you kind of had this thought about it. And then it like almost took on its own personality from all the people that I would love to hear. And I know I'm one of the newer members too, so I don't know what it was like before.
In true community form, I don't think I would have done it on my own. I don't see myself as a trailblazer, so to speak. But I think because Irene and I were talking about it and we're like, who else can we talk to about this? And then I just kind of collected a handful of Asian people who were also in the EFT space. So, and I also have just a general Asian therapist network in Chicago that Irene and I also co-founded. That's the CATCH Network, Community of Asian American Therapists in Chicagoland. So that's just for more generally Asian therapists. But the EFT group that both you and I are in, it's because Irene and I were talking about it. And then we felt the need when George Floyd happened and there was all this unrest in the world. And we wanted a place where we could talk about our own identities as therapists, but also what does that mean for our clients? What does that mean with working with our clients? And so I think we're just kind of like, this is weird and different. And the broader world, we can't go to them to work it out. We have to just go to each other.
All this is erupting right now in the world. And we don't really fit in any of these spaces. But there's something big happening.
For a lot of the discussion out there, it's a white and Black discussion. Bannock is in there somewhere. But this is not even on a continuum. It's not like white Asians in the middle with Black on the other side. It's more like there's white and Black and then there's us Asians out floating here. So, I mean, there are some parallels to that discussion, but the parallels don't exactly fit.
And we get lumped into that a lot of like, oh, people of color. But it is so different. And it's hard for me to even put words to it. Because again, like you're saying, we're just living in it. You know, for our audience, like, what is the difference? What is that nuance of the experience of being an Asian American in this mental health space?
I think our family structures, I mean, that's the obvious one. Our family structures are so different from either white or Black. The primacy
of our family
structure and how, the boundaries are different. The obligations, it's from a young age, you're just taught that your parents are center in a way, even as they center children too. And their education. Like
with the American culture, it's almost like you're a kid and then suddenly you're an adult.
Oh, yeah. You know, I love seeing when I graduated college as a senior and we're all out about what we were going to do once we graduated. All my Asian clients were saying, oh, my parents want me to move home. I don't want to do that. Right? And my white friends were saying, oh, my parents aren't allowing me to come home.
I know that. Yeah, it's mind blowing. It is mind blowing.
Yeah.
Even the summers that I would go home. In college, and then I would have to kind of go back to the rules and my white friends were like, what? You're an adult. What do you have a curfew? Like, what?
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And if we did something that our parents didn't like, they might blame it on being American when maybe we're just being a kid. I don't know. But you can't throw away the family structure. It's more dependence. Intergenerational dependence is the model. I'm using broad strokes, but in an American model, it's more like you launch your kids. Yeah, but in the Asian culture, you're not launching them in the same way. They never leave home.
And the elders are always the elders. And even when there's always that hierarchy, you have that collective structure. I think a lot of times that can get misinterpreted as us being too submissive or too enmeshed. So how can we correct some of these myths if we had to? What do you think are some of the myths? Those are some of the myths I feel like they're like being too enmeshed, too submissive. If you could put that more in context of...
Oh my gosh, right now I'm thinking, will someone out there write a book on how to be an actualized adult in an Asian?
Wow. Yes.
That would be so cool.
Yeah, and maybe we don't need to come up with words, but that's exactly it. Like, do we have a healthy model for what an actualized adult looks like in an Asian context?
Right.
Because that is different than what it looks like in a Western context. It's different, and we can't pathologize it.
Exactly. I'll speak from my culture, which I know best. Like, you know, they will say Korean culture is one of the most Confucius societies in the world. So it's kind of like, that's why everyone's an auntie or an uncle or a grandma or, you know, there's a hierarchy and a social structure that you can't escape. And that's because you as an individual are embedded in this culture. Versus the Will Rogers Lone Ranger myth model of what I feel like they're deconstructing too. Independence is still such a huge concept in American culture. Yeah. The reality shows of survivalists, like they, which one is it where they stick someone out in the wilderness for 8 weeks and they're all by themselves? And there's a part of me that's like, why? We're better in tribes.
But yeah, there's a spectrum, and we have, and different Asians are different too. I didn't know that about Koreans. That's interesting as well, that it's more. Yeah. But you know, Indian, Pakistani, everybody's an auntie. That community is big. It is protective.
It is protective. And again, I want to put out there, I mean, the Asians know this implicitly, that not all Asians are the same. But if you're listening and you don't really realize, there's so many similarities, like auntie, uncle. But, you know, Korea being such a small, homogenous ethnic society, it'll look very different than like in India, where there's a billion people, China, where there's a billion people.
And the fact that it's homogenous, too, which is different from other, like if you go to the Philippines,
Or there's different languages spoken in.
Yeah, I think that's important. That's an important point.
Yeah, we are not all the same.
Do you feel like there's more protectiveness over the culture because it's homogenous?
Oh, yeah. I mean, part of my worldview, not just Asian, is that we're tribal. Like, humans are tribal, and that's why there are wars, and that's why we fight, and all this kind of stuff. And I think that's sort of biologically in us, protection and survival. And that's the thing we have to navigate, because we hurt each other out of that in-group, out-group stuff. So it's where beauty happens.
Yes.
Like,
belonging.
Identity, but it also hurts us. Yeah.
And I think that's the biggest thing of we're trying to understand where everybody fits on that spectrum. And maybe the Western society has become too individualistic. And you see that, like what you said earlier, they're trying to deconstruct that. They're trying to kind of strive more towards this community structure, because you don't have that belonging. You don't have that safety when you don't have it. And then with the Asians and other cultures that are more collectivist, yes, we have this. We have these obligations. We can start tearing on our own individuality from that. And that's a loss that we need to figure out how to cultivate that and still have that belonging. But we're all kind of doing it. We're all kind of doing it to some extent, right? How do we keep our individuality, but also have our tribe and our cultures and our community? I think that mix of what that looks like for everybody is different. The mix of what that looks like for every culture is different. And
that's what makes it so complicated, because I think every culture is figuring out what's me and what's us. And
every culture is trying to figure out what's me and what's us. Every human is trying to figure out what's me and what's us. And just to understand, you have your own mix of that, and your client has this other mix of that, and their culture has one, and the culture that you're in.
Right. Yeah. We could say it's a dialectic, right? Like, I am, who am I? Sort of the individual psychotherapeutic process, but also I am not me without you. And, you know, depression happens in isolation, and
No, I like that was a great conversation, and I like that we're both kind of all figuring it out, but you're asking a lot of the same questions. If you were to give some advice to somebody who's working with Asian couples, or even to give other Asian therapists of kind of navigating this space, could you pick out one thing?
You know, that's really interesting because immediately my advice is different depending, are you Asian or are you not?
Yeah, that's fair. That's so fair.
Or you know what? I want to give the same. It just look it, the same one, but it just looks different. I think as a therapist, we always have to have humility. I don't know you. Like, you need to tell me your story, and I cannot envision you as I envision you. I need to envision you as you envision you. And if you're not Asian, working with an Asian client, then your listening powers have to be pretty huge. You have to have a huge satellite dish. Like, how do you be curious without making the other person feel like a specimen? That's one thing I would say. Or invisible. I mean, that's a huge concept. If you're coming from the same culture, I might say you cannot assume that that person is you either. They are different than you, different context, different story, different everything. So you also have to listen carefully and not let your assumptions get in the way. Either way, the assumptions, you got to be careful about your assumptions. That's why it's really important to be exposed to different cultures, different contexts, because you don't even know what your assumptions are.
That's what I was just about to say. I'm like, when we have those assumptions, we don't know we're doing it. So your protectiveness against that is to be like, just put yourself out there in other like. Just constantly exposure.
I would think so. I mean, I feel very lucky to have lived on both coasts and the Midwest because in a sense that my understanding is, I hope anyway, that my assumptions are a little more loose inherently. Like I said, when I went to college, I was like, oh, what is this? Like, the world was this big, but the world is that big. You know, I feel like, let's say, a Korean American growing up in the Chicagoland who never really left Illinois, like they have an awareness of diversity, but it's even bigger than that. Yeah. So I think the humility component of how do you enter with curiosity, but not voyeurism. Yeah. We had a really good discussion. I don't know if you were there, that one session that we had when we were talking about our curiosity about where are you from? Even the question, where are you from? That can sound really off-putting and microaggressing if you do it in a certain way. But I really do want to know, where are you from? There's more kind of like natural curiosity versus voyeurism.
And what is it? Do you just feel that from somebody?
Kind of, don't you, Olivia? Kind of.
I do. I'm trying to put words to it so I can help somebody, but it's such a sense. I guess for a therapist, how would they make sure they're coming from that curiosity in a good way? What can they ask themselves?
You know, even though we're the authority in the room, we are the student of that client's story, right? We have to, as a professional, have some ideas of how to help this person in front of us. That's true empathy, right? How does that person experience their life? Not how do I experience their life? Learning to do that well. Yeah, it's like a vibe. It's like an energy.
It is. You know what? Maybe there aren't words for it, but you know when you're attuned to somebody and you know when you miss it. You can tell when you're missing it. Can you be as present as possible, I think, in the room? Notice, is there stuff in your head about this? Am I going to get it wrong? Are you attuning to all those critics in your head? And be okay with a rupture.
Yeah, that's really hard. I think as a minority person who kind of pride yourself in being able to do that empathy in a sense better than maybe someone who's just monocultural, yes. When I get wrong, that can feel really bad to me. And then the pride is that, yeah, I have to be able, I mean, I would say that that's something I'm constantly working on. How do I address the rupture? Feels really bad to me.
Yeah, but I think there's so much growth there. There's going to be rupture. There's always going to be rupture in every relationship.
Well, you know, one of the EFT therapists, African-American man, Paul Guillory, he taught me something that I thought was so profound because I was watching a tape of him working with another Black couple and heterosexual couple. The man was telling Paul, yeah, we don't do that, right? We don't do vulnerability. We don't talk emotion. We don't, you know, that's not what I was taught, right? Now, if you're just privileged in culture, you're not going to do anything with it. You have to, you know, I think in some ways we're taught to respect that. But Paul said something so interesting. He went in and he's like, yeah, I get it, man. I get it. But science is now showing us this is how you get intimacy. This is how you connect. So he would say, he was basically telling the man, we know better now. Can we learn to do better?
That's great. Yeah. See, that line is so hard to toggle. Like, I get it. Yes, you're here. And I'm going to respect and honor the way you grew up and normalize that. But we're going to stretch you a little bit outside of that.
Yeah. 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 shout out to Paul, because I was like, oh yeah, that, I'm gonna use that one day.
But also, being in the same culture, you have a lot more license where you can do stuff.
That is true. That is true. That will sound very different.
And like a white clinician couldn't say that.
Oh, yeah. No, it was great. Like, how do we honor our cultures and yet say, hey, but what about doing it this way? What do you think?
Yeah, I think that kind of sums up a lot of what we were talking about. How do we honor it? How do we step into it? How do we really, really get it, like, from even a historical perspective, so we're not shaming it, pathologizing it, but we want to stretch past a little bit to do the healing.
To do the healing. Probably always coming from a good place. Survival, protection, those things aren't bad.
And they're not just inherently like, this is just part of this person's DNA or culture or whatever. It's, this has developed.
I mean, I guess a general psychotherapeutic principle is your defense mechanisms are there for good reason, but then at some point it becomes the problem.
That holds true for generations and ancestral trauma and all that as well.
Right. I think that's probably across all cultures. Your defense mechanisms eventually become a problem if you're not deploying them.
Right. And how do we disengage the defense mechanisms and the trauma from the actual culture? But wonderful. I mean, this was a great conversation. I really appreciate you a lot. I know you say, oh, I'm not a trailblazer, I mean, but you really have. I mean, this group that you started, to me itself, it has been so profound for everybody in there. Like, I can't tell you how life-changing it has been for everybody. And we have conversations outside of our group too. We're like, oh, I can't believe what Jean has done and how it's changed us. Your presence creates so much safety and ability to, you give so much permission to be messy in the process of it. So really, I can't thank you enough for everything that you've done.
Well, that means the world to me. It's my pleasure. And, you know, honestly, I have no ownership of this model. Like, I hope this is everywhere. I hope everyone is part of whatever affinity group you identify as, because we need each other. We can't do this on our own.
100%.
So.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Do you want to just kind of give a shout out to anywhere people can find you or any other resources? I know you said the Catch.
Catch is, we're in the midst of rebranding. So I don't know how long it's going to stay this way, but it's caatch.info. Catch.info. So we are the Asian therapist group in Chicago. And again, we want it to be local. We don't really want to be national, but we hope that other people elsewhere
can use that model.
Groups. Okay. Yeah. But you can find me on the Catch website. You can find me on Psychology Today. My name is pretty generic, Jean Lee, but you know, there's not too many Jean Lee's IDs in Chicago, so, or in Illinois, I guess you could say. So you could find me.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you so much. And I hope we have some more conversations.
Oh, we definitely will.
Join the movement and keep the conversation going at deconstructingtherapy.com. And follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok at Deconstructing Therapy. If you found value in today's episode, please subscribe and rate us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. If you are able to and would like to help sustain the podcast, you can find us at buymeacoffee.com/deconstructingtherapy to show your support. Thank you for listening.